because we have been saved. We tend to say, well, you know what? I can never lose my salvation, right? So what's God going to do? Is he going to like take salvation away from me? I'm just going to go ahead and live the way I want to live. I'm going to go ahead and do what I want to do. And you know what? What is it going to cost me at the end? It's all paid for. So basically at the end, I might not get a couple of crowns. Big deal. Because what are you going to do with your crowns anyway? Everybody else has got crowns. What are they going to do with their crowns? You're going to cast them where? At Jesus' feet. And then everybody else is going to be as crownless as me. I mean, we literally are that perverted in our thinking that we actually develop that way of thinking, even though we don't necessarily put it in those words. What's God going to do? I mean, I really am saved, right? I did ask him to forgive me. He told me he would, and he did. So, you know what? I'm just going to live however I want to live. And you know what? Okay, I don't get some crowns. Folks, you need to understand that God never thinks that way. He never thinks this way. And until you recognize that God can and does, in a sense, remove himself from you when you sin, that ought to become the most terrifying thought to you. That you would live your life apart from God's blessing. That you would live your life apart from God's favor. That you would live your life in a way that God would say, I don't want to be there. That ought to terrify you. It terrified Micah. It terrified Peter. It terrified Paul in the New Testament. It ought to terrify you. And Micah looks around, and everywhere he looks, he can't see God. God is absent. He looks around and asks the question, where is there even one righteous person? Woe is me, for I am like those who gather summer fruit, like those who glean vintage grapes. There is no cluster to eat of the first ripe fruit which my soul desires. I mean, here's the picture. I own a vineyard. I've planted a vineyard. I can't wait for the first fruits to come. I come to my vineyard to get the first fruits, and the whole vineyard has been picked clean. There's nothing left. Micah said, I came to Israel and I looked for one righteous man. Verse 2, the faithful man has perished from the earth, and there is no one upright among men. Here's what everybody is like. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net that they may successfully do evil with both hands. I mean, it's not enough for Micah to say, well, they just do evil with one hand. He wants you to understand how given these people are to wickedness. I mean, this is an incredible picture. The prince asks for gifts or bribes. The judge seeks a bribe. The great man utters his evil desires, and they scheme together. The best of them is like a briar. The most upright of them is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of your watchman and your punishment comes. Now shall be their perplexity. Can you think of another man in your Old Testament who looked for a righteous man to save a city? Can you think of one? I mean, do you remember the story in Genesis of Abraham talking to the Lord about a wicked city called Sodom? And he said to the Lord, Lord, if there are 50 righteous people, would you spare the city? And what did God say? Yes. And Abraham says, now, what about 40? Would you do 40? And God says, what? Yeah. Lord, I don't mean to be bold here, but how about 30? Would we go for 30? And the Lord said, yes, I'll do it for 30. And he goes all the way down to how many? You remember? How many? Do you remember? 10, right? And then Abraham says, okay, I think I pushed it as far as I could push it. Surely with Lot being in there, here is Lot. He knows Yahweh. He's got an entire family. Surely there'll be 10. There'll be at least 10, right? Were there? Now here is another man standing before the Lord who is about to wreak a havoc in judgment upon his people. And he's looking around and he doesn't even bring it up to God because there isn't even one righteous man. I mean, what do you do when God is so absent from his people that there is no one who is righteous? Micah despairs because there are no righteous people. He despairs because not only are there no righteous people, there are no loyal people. Look at verse 5. Do not trust in a friend. Do not put your confidence in a companion. Guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your bosom, from your wife, in other words. For son dishonors father, and daughter rises against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household. I mean, this is how bad it gets when God's people choose to live their own lives apart from God. When you X God out of your life, this is what life becomes. You think it's hard to live the way God told you to live. Just live the way God told you not to live long enough and you will discover what hard really is. I mean, if God's people had been living according to the statutes that he gave them under Moses, do you think that they would have been able to trust in their friends? Do you think that they could have put confidence in their companions? Do you think they would have had to guard their mouth and not say things to their wife? Do you think that a son would have been dishonoring to his father, or a daughter rising in rebellion against her mother, or a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law? Do you think if God's people had been living according to the statutes that God gave them in the law of Moses, that a man's enemies would have been in his own house? Do you think that? And the answer is what? No. This is what happens when you choose the statutes of Omri and Ahab. This is what happens to life. This is what happens to society. This is what happens to family when you choose to live your way rather than God's way. This is what happens when your ways are wiser in your eyes than God's ways are. I mean, that really is the case. I mean, there are literally times in our life when we look at our ways and we say, you know what? That is wiser than what God said, and I'm going to do that. Because that is what will make me happy, or that is what will work best. And when we live in ways that please us, or because we have convinced ourselves that this really is the right way to do it, and God has said, no, this is the way I want you to go, then this is what we reap in our life. And Micah is looking out and he can't find a righteous person. He can't find a loyal person. And beginning in verse 8, he can't find even one person who will stand up and vindicate and defend the people who are about to be destroyed. And so he speaks for the nation. Do not rejoice over me, my enemy. When I fall, I will arise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. I will bear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him, until he pleads my case and executes justice for me. He will bring me forth to the light. I will see his righteousness. Then she who is my enemy will see, and shame will cover her who said to me, "Where is the Lord your God?" My eyes will see her. Now she will be trampled down like mud in the streets. I mean, literally, Micah looks at the city of Jerusalem and he starts talking like he's the city. And he puts words in the city that will one day be there, but they will one day be there after God's judgment, because right now these are not the words the city is saying. The city is not admitting that they have sinned. The city doesn't believe that they will be destroyed. And Micah finally stands up with a heart torn in grief. And he says, I can't find even one person who will vindicate you. And so there is coming a day when God will have dealt with you so thoroughly and so brutally and so directly. He will crush the rebellion out of you. And eventually you will come to the place where you acknowledge to him that you have sinned. I can't think of a thing more painful to the heart of a parent than to watch one of their children get to the place where the only thing that is left for that child is for God to crush the rebellion out of them. I can't think of a thing more painful to a parent. I've got two children of my own. We pray regularly that God would do a work in their life and in their heart, just like you pray for your children, right? I can't think of a thing more difficult to go through as a mother and as a dad than for us to watch either Ashton or RD get to the place in their life where they have so rejected God's counsel that the only thing left is for God to crush them to bring about the peaceable fruit of what? Righteousness. Micah is here to say to us that God will do that, because we have a propensity to say, well, he really won't do that. But sometimes the only thing left to God for him to be righteous is to do precisely that. And this is exactly what happens to Israel. Right? Now, what are we to do when God makes that decision in life? Well, let me show you the last thing. This is what Micah does. We saw the reality of his grief. We saw the reason for his grief. There are no righteous people. There are no loyal people. There is nobody left that will even stand up and begin to try to defend this people. There is judgment coming, and it will literally crush the rebellion out of them. What does Micah do? How does he respond to all of this? Look at verse 7. There is a response to this grief. Therefore, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the Lord of my salvation. My God will hear me. This is Micah's way of saying what the psalmist said in Psalm 11 when he said, if the foundations be destroyed, what shall the righteous do? Remember that verse in Psalm 11? There is a way to translate that verse that I think captures the essence of what the psalmist is actually saying in verse 3 of Psalm 11. It's not if the foundations be destroyed, but it is when the foundations are destroyed, what should the righteous do? You know what the answer to that is? God is, verse 4, God is still on his throne in heaven. What are we to do when the foundations of our life, the foundations of our world are so destroyed by what God has to do in order to prove himself righteous? What should righteous people living in the midst of that kind of a set of circumstances with people they care about and people they love, what should they do? And you know what the answer is? Trust God. Trust God. I mean, this is at the end what Micah has to do. Micah has to do what he's been telling the people to do all along. You have to trust God. He said, I will wait for the God of my salvation. I will look to the Lord. The word look and wait in verse 7 are key terms in all of the Old Testament. They are words that are associated with trust and belief and confident assurance. I will trust God to do the right thing. In the midst of my agony, in the midst of my heart being torn apart for the people that I love, I will trust God. I will wait on the Lord. But that's not all he said, is it? Look at the end of verse 7. My God will what? My God will hear me. My God will hear me. So let me ask you a question. Do you think Micah's prayers were answered? Micah said, you know what? Everything I've preached has been set aside. Everything I've hoped for has been dashed. Everything I've begged these people to do has been absolutely disregarded. Everything I didn't want God to do, he's going to do. But I know this, God will hear me. So did God hear Micah? And the answer is what? Yes. When is God going to answer Micah's prayer? I mean, you are looking at a prayer that was prayed thousands of years ago that hasn't been answered yet. You are going to have an opportunity to witness the answer to this prayer. You are going to see the day that God literally answers the prayer of this heartbroken prophet. Because there is coming a day on this earth when God will gather this nation that has been scattered to all of the parts of the earth, and he is going to give them a heart of righteousness. They are going to want to walk in the ways of the Lord. They are going to be restored to their former glory. They will have everything that Micah prayed for. There is going to come a day on this earth where that will happen, and I believe Micah will see it. And he will know on that day that God answered a prayer that he prayed thousands of years ago in our time and in our history. And when he prayed the prayer, he said this: I will look to the Lord. I will wait on the Lord. And the Lord will hear me. Do you have that kind of confidence in God? Do you believe that God will hear you when you pray those kinds of prayers? And it takes 20 or 30 years before it happens. Do you believe that? I mean, when you pray for people that set aside God's laws and God's will, and they do it intentionally as his people, do you believe there is ever going to come a day when they're going to look just like Jesus Christ? Because isn't that what you're praying, Lord? Make them like you. Make them like. Do you believe God's going to hear your prayer? Romans chapter 8, verse 28, right? And 29. We are being conformed to something God predestinated us to. We are being conformed to the image of who? Christ. And here's the hope that every one of us has. When we pray for people that we love, who are setting aside God's laws like these people were, God will hear us. There is going to come a day when they are going to look just like the Lord. They will have a new heart. And you say, well, I sure wish it would happen soon. How do you think Micah felt? Right? I mean, this book is in our Bibles to teach us the reality of life on this earth. And the reality of life on this earth is that sometimes we pray and we pray and we pray, and we don't think God hears us, but he does. And he answers. And sometimes it will be in the future. In a future that we won't see on this earth, like Micah will see on this earth. But sometimes it might be in a future where we see that loved one that we've spent our entire life praying for, who is a Christian walking in rebellion against God. And on the day he stands before God, you know what you're going to discover? He is going to look just like the Lord. She is going to have a heart that you wish they had had on this earth. Now, this message has been primarily targeted to the Micahs in this group. Let me talk for a minute to the Judas in this group. Judah went through unbelievable pain to get there. You may be resting tonight on the idea that, well, you know, my mom's praying for me, my dad's praying for me, my husband's praying for me, my wife's praying for me, all these people are praying for me, and eventually I'm going to get there according to Pastor Sam. Well, you know what? Sometimes God will take you home to make it happen. There have been times when I have preached funerals of people that I honestly believe God took home because that was the only way he could get them to look and think like he wanted them to look and think. You don't say that at the funeral, but you think it in your heart as a pastor. And young people, some of you here are at the beginning stages of your life, and you are making decisions about how you're going to orient your life, and you think that it is okay to disregard God. You think that it is okay just to live however you want and just come to his house and say the Yahweh words and do the God thing, and eventually it's all going to work out. Can I just tell you that you need to know about the kind of God that Micah preached? You need a good, healthy fear of him at times in your life. You really do. You need to understand that God isn't kidding when He said He hates sin. I mean, if you want to know how much God hates the sin that you're toying around with that you think's okay, look at what He did to His own Son for it. He executed Him on a cross over that sin that you think is okay. If you think God feels okay about sin, park it at the cross for a while. Some of you need to do that in here. Some of you who think it's cool just to kind of be half in and half out, it isn't cool. You are the most miserable person in the room if you're like that. I mean, honestly, at some point, you are going to have to decide whether or not you believe the God you say you believe. And if you believe Him, then you've got to get your life in line with Him. And if you think it's okay to just appease Him because you cut your hair a certain way and we can put a certain kind of clothes on you and we can turn off a certain kind of music, if you think that's what makes them happen, go read Micah again. These people were coming with the sacrifices. They were coming to the right place. They had all the little chants down. And God says, I don't want any of it. You're never going to get there by cleaning yourself up on the outside. If you think that you can holiness into God on your own, you're absolutely mistaken. You are going to do the same thing that this nation did. It isn't going to work. It has to be what you desire in your, where? Heart. That's where it all starts. So if you're a Micah in here, you've got to trust God. You've got to look to God, you've got to wait on God, and you've got to believe that God will answer. But if you're a Judah in here, you've got to bow to God. You know, if you're a parent here, if you're a husband or a wife, and you're living in ways that don't please the Lord, and you've decided that it's okay, God isn't okay with this, right? I mean, Dad, if you're in here tonight and you are messing around in your spiritual life and you're just kind of sitting around doing nothing spiritually for God and you think that's okay, it isn't okay. God isn't happy with that. I mean, if you are the first picture that your son or your daughter have of God, if their view of God comes from you, then God is particularly concerned about how you live as a dad, right? And that's true. Moms, the same goes for you. If your child's approach to authority, if their view of authority and how to respond to it comes from how you respond to dad and how you submit to dad, God isn't at all pleased when you aren't modeling that in your life. And for you to think that He's happy with this, and for you to think it's all okay, because after all, we show up and do a lot of stuff for Him, is absolutely the very same thing that this nation did, week after week, year after year, month after month. And you know what God said? I'm sick of it. I want none of it. None of it. There are no righteous people. There are no loyal people. To the point that there is nobody left who will stand up to defend this nation, because everybody who stands up immediately looks at the evidence and sits right back down and says, you know what? God's right. God's right. The only thing left that He can do to still be righteous is to judge these people. And there are times, folks, in our lives where because we have taken it upon ourselves to live however we want to live, that we put God in that same position with one difference. And it's the best difference in the world. There is the cross. Where did God do the judging? He did it at the cross, right? That's why we can come to Him when we are Judas and pour our hearts out to Him and find grace for our souls. That's why we can come to Him when we're Micahs and pour our heart out and look at the cross and know that He will do right. He will do righteously, but He will also do mercy. And so tonight, as we close, I mean, here's a simple invitation tonight. You're either a Micah or a Judah. Where are you in the mix? If you're a Micah, are you willing to trust God, even if it means that he has to go for a very long time doing very hard things to the thing or to the person that you are trusting him over? And if you're a Judah in some area of your life, are you willing to change? Or are you going to continue to do the same things that this nation did? I mean, that's really the message of Micah in a nutshell. There's one more part that we'll look at next week, but this is really the heart of it. Are you going to be a Micah or are you going to be a Judah in the everyday minutes of your life?